Welcome to Darnley Cyber Cafe, your digital information haven for coffee aficionados. In an age where data is currency, every click could be a threat. Knowledge is your greatest defense. I'm your host, Darnley Grissom Jr., and this is the podcast where we illuminate the dark corners of our digital world. Join us as we navigate the ever-changing currents of cybersecurity news, IT security, and the latest in the business digital landscape. Whether you're a seasoned IT professional, a business executive, or just curious about the forces shaping our digital future, Darnley Cyber Cafe is your digital coffeehouse guiding you through the noise. I'm here to break down the headlines, decode the jargon, and deliver actionable insights to protect your data, your business, and most importantly, your peace of mind. So, fasten your digital seatbelts and prepare to embark on a journey through the ever-shifting world of cyber threats, news, and IT security. Darnley Cyber Cafe, your digital information haven for coffee aficionados, starts now. Episode 57, Metal Record Thefts on the Rise. So today's episode, we're going to recap over why cybercriminals are targeting your medical data, what is MoveIt, and decades of newborn data stolen in Ontario, and is protecting your sensitive data impossible now? Let's get into it. So why are cybercriminals targeting your medical data? Well, there are several reasons why they target your medical data. Now, I'm going to break down a very quick list of things where you would think they would be basically obtaining this data. But let me just get into it. So your medical records consists of very valuable information, including your personally identifiable information, medical history, treatment plans, insurance details, and payment information. Now, this is because this is a huge demand in the black market. They can literally sell this information to be used for fraudulent purposes, such as their financial gain, identity theft, or to commit insurance fraud. Now, medical records often hold your social insurance number, birth dates, addresses, all this data that can be accumulated can be used to commit fraud. Now, with healthcare fraud, criminals can use this to bill insurance companies or government healthcare programs to services or for medication. They can also use this for extortion purposes. Criminals may threaten to release sensitive medical information such as health records or STI diagnosis to extort money from individuals or healthcare providers. Unfortunately, majority of users are at the mercy of the medical institutions, which are their mercy of the medical institutions with protecting their medical data. I don't think you really ask your provider in your history of dealing with your medical institution, you know, what their security practices are. You just arbitrarily assume that they're taking good care of your data. But unfortunately, in the cybersecurity community, we have seen this happen time and time again through public, through private institutions. All of them, in some way, shape, or form, have been breached. Now, you can look for certain regulatory compliances, and different countries have different regulatory compliances. So I can't speak on all of them, but for the most common ones, like HIPAA from the United States, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, the GDPR, which is a General Data Protection Regulation in Europe, PIPEDA, which is Personal Health Information Protection Act in Canada, and the Data Protection Act in the United Kingdom. These compliances you should make sure that when you are dealing with medical institutions, big or small, that they are adhering to these regulatory compliances in your particular country. These are very important. Now, these aren't a bulletproof to absolutely protect you, because I can speak from experience from different institutions that are compliant in some way, shape, or form, have been breached in some way. And I'll get into the meat and potatoes of the newborn data in a moment, especially in Ontario, Canada. So this will basically show you that even though a government entity, which you assume would have all of the regulations in place and all the protections in place, is not the case. And they're the ones who are messing up big time and are releasing troves upon troves of data into the dark web or into the internet for people to purchase for this particular reason. But one big question that I have or been getting, or I should propose to parents in particular who have children of all different ages, particularly the smaller ones, what if something happens to your children's health records? Do you think about the ramifications of when your newborn's health records get stolen? And how would you deal with this? This is excellent questions, and these are questions you need to ask yourself. And I can almost guarantee you that you don't know. And that's the scariest thing, because you don't know what you don't know. And this is very alarming, and this is very concerning. And this brings me to my next topic about what is MOVEit and decades of newborn data stolen in Ontario, Canada. Have you ever heard of the MOVEit attack? Did you know that over 100 million individuals have been affected since, well, 100 million individuals have been affected to date of this podcast? Touted as the largest hack of the year so far, the mass exploitation of the breach caused many victims worldwide. It began in May of 2023 when Progress disclosed a zero-day vulnerability in the MOVEit transfer. This is a managed file transfer service used by thousands of organizations around the world to move transfers of typically sensitive data across the internet. This vulnerability allowed cyber criminals to raid this vulnerability and access MOVEit transfer servers, to steal customer sensitive information stored there. Now, this hack was done with the Russian-linked ransomware and extortion gang CLOP, CLOP. CLOP has threatened to publish the stolen data if they don't receive payments. Now, why talk about newborns? This threat in particular has affected some 3.4 million people in Ontario, Canada, for patients who sought pregnancy care, and including the 2 million newborn children across this Canadian province. This is not small numbers here, people. This is a big deal, because for those who know, Canada isn't exactly, well, it's a big country. However, it doesn't have a lot of people. There are many countries like the United States, Europe, that have a lot more people in certain square kilometers of land, whereas Canada does not. So this number, especially in Canadian terms, to put this in perspective, is a lot of people. Now, according to the government-funded agency BORN, B-O-R-N, Ontario, the hackers have copied more than a decade worth of data, including fertility, pregnancy, and newborn and child health care, offered between January 2010 to May 2023. So if you are a Canadian listener and your child was born between January 2010 and May 2023, this should concern you. When the Ontario Privacy's Watchdog, the Information and Privacy Commissioner, which oversees BORN, declined to comment further of the incident, there has been no word yet if BORN has paid the ransom. Now, what really concerns me here, and I've said this in past podcasts, and I'm going to say it again, is paying the ransom is the wrong thing to do. And I know I'll get some kickback and people saying, well, Darnley, it's good to get the information unlocked, et cetera, so forth. But ultimately, this information that I'm going to dispense now has been common knowledge for 20 plus years, is that you need to create proper and efficient backups. And when your data is stolen, once it's out of your hands, it is gone. So no amount of ransom is going to bring back the data that has already been stolen or potentially copied and distributed somewhere else. You are essentially paying criminals so that you can get your information unlocked. But if you've done the right things from the get-go, you would not be in a situation. You would say some choice words to these criminals, and you would restore your data backups and be on your way. Now, it won't change the fact that your data has been stolen. That you can't really return. But you are basically paying criminals. And once these ransoms are being paid, and this happens all over the world, corporations pay ransoms and insurance agencies pay the ransom. Okay? This is also important. And you're basically feeding the fire, so to speak, with these criminals. And they will take the money, and I can almost guarantee you put it towards more nefarious actions against you and I. But I digress. The MoveIt attack has affected over 100 million individuals so far, with not all organizations that have disclosed the incidences, so that number of victims still continues to climb today. Many other organizations, such as the U.S. federal agencies, which also relied on MoveIt software. The Klopp Gang have been the masterminds of attacking file transfer tools such as Fortra and Acylon. Now, this is very key, because if you look at, for example, this attack in Ontario, Canada, against those birth registry websites, is that they basically use third-party software to administer these file transfers. So this is something, as a business owner, a business leader, or someone who's very sensitive to their data, needs to understand, is the second you put someone else's hands on your data, you lose control. And I hear this all the time. Darnley, why should I be a paranoid person and not trust these institutions to protect my data? Well, for one, is that when situations like this happen, which it's not a matter of if, it's always a matter of when it happens, you need to make sure that you're playing your cards right in making sure that you have the information stored somewhere else or no longer on these services, or they get removed. Now, I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty details of the MoveIt software, but I know is that a lot of these larger federal organizations truly rely on third parties, because to make it in-house, which I understand as a business owner myself, I understand that these things actually cost money. And why would you want to reinvent the wheel, right? Why would you want to spend more of your capital on something that already exists? I totally understand that. But at the end of the day, you can't bring back things that have been stolen, things that have been broken, and you continue to erode your trust in these organizations and erode the trust in these institutions that are supposed to protect your data, right? So again, this brings me to my next topic. Is protecting your data impossible now? I have heard this question throughout the ages since I got into this back in 2013. What's the point? You go through all this cybersecurity stuff, and now to find that the transfer tool you relied on gets compromised and all your customers' data is stolen. Yes, many organizations and agencies rely on third-party transfer tools such as MoveIt, but the big question is why? developing your own tools can be expensive and cause extra overhead, as I mentioned. So relying on third parties makes financial sense to reduce amounts of the building expenses in-house. Duh. But it's also frustrating here that your children's or your own data have been stolen. Many people who do not listen to these sorts of stories don't think to understand much about it or give it a second thought. It only becomes a reality to them once something major happens to their bank account or something that really affects them. This can be a very damaging mindset. However, humans are known to be complacent, even within war zones. And I say that is because of, if you listen to the stories of people who are literally in the middle of a war zone, that they're just living their everyday life like you and I, even though the threat of a bomb dropping on their head or, you know, a bullet going through their home is more reality for them than most of us. So once you become complacent, you don't have many issues anymore. And many parents don't think about the damaging attributes of losing their children's information, their children's data. And you hear this all over the news where mortgages or lines of credits or loans are opened up through their kids. They're not even of age yet, but somehow get these loans opened. And basically when they turn 18 and start trying to apply for credit, their credit's already ruined. So another thing to tell parents is to make sure that you have identity theft protection on your kids at a young age. Even though they're not opening up lines of credit or credit cards or buying cars, etc., is that you have to make sure if this data is of your children or somehow on the web and are becoming a problem, then before it becomes a problem for you, that you have the tools in place today to protect your children for tomorrow. And then that's the basic gist of it. But do you understand that those CLOP ransomware people can make upwards of $100 million with this attack? And even if the ransom gets paid by organizations and these insurance agencies, like I said earlier, this is only going to fuel the fire of these attacks or become more sophisticated. I know this is a little frustration with no real end in sight. I get it. But having perspective that laying your eggs in the proverbial basket is not a good idea either, especially when it comes to handling your customer information. So, what can you do? That's the million-dollar question here. For businesses such as MoveIt, they should implement robust cybersecurity measures, including firewalls, intrusion detection systems, regular software updates, access controls, network security practices. Regular cybersecurity training for personnel is also essential to prevent human error, which could lead to these security breaches. For individuals and normal folk, always use a unique non-repeating password and make sure they're not guessable. Enable two-factor authentication on all your accounts that support it. For the ones that don't, email the company or ask the support of that company and ask why and that they should implement these two-factor authentication. Don't click on links in emails. Always be skeptical of emails that have a sense of urgency. Every single time I receive a phony phone call, that has a ring to it, doesn't it? When I receive a phony phone call, I know it's fake when someone on the other line seems to be very urgent and something bad has happened to one of my credit cards or something like that. It becomes very funny. Honestly, at certain points, it becomes very funny. It goes beyond the whole annoyances. Like some people get very pissed off over the phone calls or the emails, but I've kind of put a bit of a humor spin to it so I don't go insane. I just know any calls that come in from a bank, a so-called bank, a so-called agency or whatever, telling me my card's been hacked or I've had these fraudulent charges. I know it's full of it. I'm put the certain measures, and please speak to your banks if you don't know what certain measures to put in place to protect yourself. Call your bank yourself and make sure you are ready for these things before it happens. But anyways, Don't click on links on emails. Always assume the emails are fraudulent. And if they have a sense of urgency, like, you know, your Amazon delivery is not going to get delivered if you don't click on this link, blah, blah, blah. Question everything. Okay. Back up your data. I talked about this earlier. Don't rely on one backup drive or just cloud backups. They all can fail, one or the other. And that's a problem with many of these organizations that are going to cloud-only applications. Is I'm not saying that cloud is horrible, but understand when it comes to your information that you need to have it in more than one location. Multiple locations, multiple redundancy, man. That's the name of the game this day and age. It's not relying on the big three to protect you. It's about covering your own butt when it comes to these sorts of things and making sure that you have a local. So, for example, I'll tell you an example of a client of mine, so to speak. They had all their kids' photographs, their family's photographs on a big three photo sharing website, and they told me, you know, darling, we don't need a local backup, blah, blah, blah. And I said to them, well, what happens if you fall in hard times, or one of the Amazon servers go down, or Microsoft or Google servers go down, and you can't access these photographs anymore, or they're gone forever. What then? You're going to lose over 10 years worth of your child growing up, since you don't print anything that you're not going to be able to see anymore. And how will that make you feel? Oh, it'll make me feel pretty bad and horrible. I said, okay, so is that justifiable to go to a big box store and pick up a data drive and download all of your photographs onto this one drive that you have at home? So, you know, if something were to happen online, if anything happens to this provider, i.e. Amazon, that you'd have copies, you'll be peace of mind knowing that you have copies stored in your desk at home somewhere, knowing that you'll be able to access it whenever. Yes, darling, that'll make me feel better. Okay. So justify the cost in that way. Think about what if scenarios, if that drive dies and if that online account dies, that you have redundancy. You have those datas. You have those, can't talk today in this podcast, ladies and gentlemen, I apologize. That your information is stored in multiple locations that you're no longer able to feel worried about or even think about if something were to happen to, you know, let's say for worst case scenario, your house burns down, you know that those pictures are also stored online as well. So there are these beneficial attributes as to why you need to store them on different locations. Next point is to stay informed of scams. Listen to podcasts such as these to keep a general understanding of today's cybercrimes. Don't think you need to sit there and listen to the nitty-gritty if you're not a cyber professional. You do not need to listen to every single breach and every single vulnerability that is out there. Otherwise, you're going to get very tired of it within the next month or two, and you're going to go back to the normalcy bias, period. Understand the basics. Understand the rights, the wrongs, the should-dos and can-dos, and move on that. And you don't need to be a cybersecurity professional to understand the basics. And all of us, even as professionals, say you need to stick to the basics. And that is it. If you stick to that, you're way ahead of the majority of the population. I can tell you that much. Lock down your information. Be very mindful of sharing personal information, especially with strangers on social media. I can tell you a gazillion stories of people I've run into, situations I've been involved with, where your personal information was shared needlessly. You share your information to your barista. You share your information to some random stranger. Now, I'm not saying to be super paranoid and be a recluse. No, what I'm saying is that you need to be very mindful of the data that you provide. Okay, it's very simple. And understand on social media especially, and we'll use children as an example here, that sharing your information on social media is also very imperative, that you only post information that does not give away certain identifiable features or locations of where you live or where your children go, stuff like that. Be very mindful. A lot of YouTube influencers, for example, are very mindful of this. And I may or may not have some YouTube influencers who I consult with, but they keep very mindful so that they can keep their vlogs, they can keep their life, they can still be able to have a certain element of privacy, all the while doing the things that they enjoy doing online. Check your credit report. Do this semi-annually if possible. I'm not saying check your credit every week, every month. We all know how ridiculous the credit agencies are. You know, believe me, they are ridiculous. And when you see that line going up and down, you know, if you're behind a few payments or you have extra money in your credit cards, et cetera, you know, we're not all perfect, that the credit card will go up and down and it can cause some sort of level of anxiety. But just keeping an eye on that, just in case something gets purchased or something that comes through that isn't yours, that you can actually make actionable differences on it instead of just letting it sit there for many years without realizing, you know, someone's trying to ding your credit and that's affecting your bottom line. So always check your credit report. Separate accounts and email addresses. This is kind of important, and I'm going to talk about this for a little bit near the end of this podcast, because this is something that a lot of people I've seen are not doing anymore. Don't use the same email address for everything. Have one email address used for important transactions and another for your newsletters and online shopping. Now, a lot of people don't understand this, and they've been doing this for years. You know, if you've been around for, you know, 15, 20 years, you have one email address everyone knows you for, and they email you there, all your stuff is there, you've had it for so long, et cetera, so forth. It's not a big deal. So why is this important? Because when your information gets breached, when you use an email address for even 5 years, it's already leaked on the internet. It's already out there. Someone somewhere knows your email address and will use that email address to exploit you. You can't hide from it. Let's be honest. But the reason this happens is because you shotgun your one email address to 50 to 100 websites, either that be newsletters, news reports, apps, whatever. And what that allows these websites to do is to archive this stuff. And then eventually at some point in time, they're going to get breached. Their information is going to get leaked and your email address is out there. So it's literally impossible for you to have one email address and be perfectly safe out there without being in any measure of being scammed or being attacked or try to get someone to, do something wrong towards you, especially using your email address. So having a specific email address that's only for your banking, for your financials, for your taxes, for government agencies, that one you can keep there. That's your most important one, because you want to think about it this way. If you got sick and tired of all the newsletters, all the scams and spam, et cetera, to your, let's say, throwaway account, you will have zero issues deleting it and starting anew and having some sort of breather before it happens all over again in a few years. So doing that will actually keep your most important information safe. It will keep that email safe, and it'll be less likely for that email address. I'm not saying it's going to be impossible. It's going to be less likely for that particular email account to be breached or taken advantage of, because you only have it for the most important logins. So having the ability to separate that, having anywhere between 2 to 4 email addresses and having one for the most important one and the rest can just be for throwaway or for family, etc., is the name of the game these days. So this is why medical records thefts are on the rise. This is why people lose their email addresses, lose their login credentials all the time, because they reuse the same passwords, they reuse the same email addresses, and cyber criminals know this. They absolutely know this. No matter which way you want to string this, they do know that you do this. They also know you reuse the same password, you put in a special character like an exclamation mark. They know you put a few numbers on the end of the same password. Trust me, I've seen it. The criminals, the hackers, the white hat hackers try the same methods to break into accounts, and it works like a charm. It is very, very, very sad, but it's very, very, very true. Thanks for listening to this episode of Darnley Cyber Cafe. Be sure to subscribe and stay tuned for weekly episode releases, because in the world of cybersecurity, knowledge is power.